Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
And Kate.
Welcome to MedCrime.
Remote MedCrimes. And poor Devin just got the blue screen of death on her home computer.
Oh, we did. We did. I almost went to your house.
Yeah.
Without wearing undergarments, because I was not changing. It was going to happen.
I was going to say, well, it wouldn't be the first time you were in my house without underpants on, but hey, that's all right.
Wow. So, okay. That sounds terrible. First of all,
it doesn't. It's just bestie vibes. It's just bestie shit. What's up, everybody?
Thank you to my husband, who's like half an IT guy and was able to fix the blue screen of death on the home computer.
And we have some Patreon.
I'm loving it.
Abby! Thank you, Abby. We also have Casey Duran. Casey, thank you so much. We so appreciate you. And last and finally, we have Caitlin Baker. Caitlin!
Hey, Caitlin. You guys are awesome. What's their creature?
Yes. My goodness. So I have a good one. So you guys are...
Well, I have a name for them only because I'm still thinking about Arizona.
Okay. If you have an idea right now, just shout it out, babe.
They are Grand Canyon elks, the three of them.
Like,
no, it's not mythological, but they were beautiful and serene and peaceful, and they just let me come to them and take my Selkies, and it was awesome. So I want to take Selkies with the three of them.
So for those of you who might not have put it together, a Selkie is when you take a selfie with an elk, and they're a very real thing. And we did this at the Grand Canyon.
First of all, I can't wait a minute.
We left them alone.
Well, I mean, I was somewhat close. There was a stone wall in between us,
but they like walk right up to you. Yeah, it's crazy.
You really had to explain what a selkie was. I called him an elk. Come on.
Yeah, I did, Devin.
Did anyone else know what I meant when I said selkie?
You know what?
Come on.
You know what? Okay. You know what? Never mind. Just, I'll chop it out if it will make you happy.
No, you leave it in. I need to know if the people catch what I'm putting down.
Okay, fine. Well, we missed you guys. And guess what?
No, no.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
I found out about this 3 hours ago and I'm not happy.
So, I mean, you clicked on the episode, so you know what it's about. But we are revisiting Carl Tanzler because we can and because I can do
because
whatever I want.
Kate likes a special kind of torture.
Also,
I'm just
better at this shit now, and I'm better at researching, and we have a couple of new tidbits to add in, which make it even saucier. Yeah,
what,
buddy?
Some extra wax was added to it, or what?
Like, there was like so much wax, it was outrageous. But there's even more. There's a couple more little things. So it's all good stuff. It's gonna be great. Everybody, just buckle up. Hold on to your mortician's wax. We are going to talk about Carl Tanzler.
I can't believe you're doing this again.
Yeah. Are you sure?
When you thought this was a once in a lifetime at one point in time, and then you just bring it back.
Well, you know, we got to take these real good old ones and just revamp them at least once a season.
Bring it on.
Devin is actually psyched about this. All right. So we are revisiting our friend Carl Tanzler, and we don't have a ton of information about his early life for obvious reasons, but we do know
that it was a long fucking time ago.
It sure was. And he was born in Germany, and he actually went by a few different names, like, throughout his life. He actually went by George Carl Tanzler at one point, and then at one point he also went by Carl Tanzler von Kossel. But on his death certificate after he passed, it was listed as Carl Tanzler. So from what we can tell, we're just going to refer to him as Carl Tanzler because that's what everybody believes his name to be.
I don't believe it.
Okay. Well, Devin doesn't believe anything right now. She's a little saucy today. He was born February 8th, 1877 in Dresden, Germany, specifically. And while he did seem to grow up mostly in Germany, he spent a lot of his formative years traveling also. And we have some very sparse records of him staying for prolonged periods of time or even maybe living in different parts of the world. So I don't have a ton of information on this, but we do know that he had spent some time in Asia, that he had spent some time in Australia. So I apologize for not having a ton more information, but we do know that while he was born in January, he did kind of travel and see a lot of the world. And it was around the time of like World War One primarily that he was spending a lot of his time in Australia. So we do know that he spent a lot of time over there around the World War One era. And there's some records that even reflect that he might have been held in detention in Australia for a period of time. We don't know why. We don't really have any information on this, but this was something that he journaled about because he journaled throughout his whole childhood, adolescence, and young adulthood. He kept like a pretty good journal about everything, and some of them have been lost to time.
I don't remember that detail.
Yeah, because he journaled a lot.
Now I'm like thinking, did he have journals of everything that he was doing to his gal?
Yeah. I don't think that he journaled that much in that era.
Yeah.
But it was more like in his youth that he did a lot of that. And it was in his journals that he described being plagued by visions. And he would have these visions while he was awake. And then at night, he would have these very vivid dreams. And he took his dreams and his visions very seriously because he claimed a lot of his late family members and ancestors also had reportedly had visions like this, had very intense dreams. So it was just like a thing in his family that he believed wholeheartedly was very real. So whether it was or was not, you know, whatever. But that's something that that was a very common running theme within his journaling. And he was very like kind of consumed by his visions. And every time he would get one, he would like kind of try and overinterpret things and kind of, you know, find meaning in every little detail when it seems like, you know, that might have just been like meaningless or arbitrary. But he took them very seriously. So there was one vision in particular that had a very huge and very lasting impact on him. And this was probably around his teen or preteen years. And apparently, he described it as this ancestor of his came to him in a vision or a dream and showed him this woman. And this person showed Carl an image of this woman who had like very, very dark, almost black hair, this beautiful, white, smooth, pale skin. And her face was just like an angel. She had like these dark eyes. When he saw her, he was like awestruck. He's like, this is like the most angelically beautiful creature I have ever seen. Exactly. It was like the angels were singing. And his ancestor said to him in this vision or dream, you are going to marry this woman. This is the person who you are meant to be with. And this is your person. And that just like imprinted itself onto his soul. Like from that moment forward, that was like, This is my lot in life.
This is my person.
This is my person. This is my lady.
He imprinted.
He imprinted. Any Twilight fans out there?
He imprinted on her.
There's imprinting happening, okay? And he just like lived his life from that day forward, sort of like quietly looking for this woman who he didn't really encounter or believe to encounter until later on, which we will get into. And he would talk about her like she is the love of his life, but he's never even met her at this point. And he became extremely serious about this. But records do reflect that he actually did marry someone around the year 1921 named Doris Schaefer. And I actually don't have any clue what Doris looked like, if she resembled that woman or if that was, you know, in any way, shape or form he ever thought that she was the one, or if this was just somebody else he met and liked and kind of put that vision thing away for a while. After the marriage, records reflect that Tansler and his wife Doris entered the United States. And in 1926 is when they first came to the U.S. and they ended up settling in Zephyr Hills, Florida.
100.
That was, oh my God, it was 100
years. 100 years ago.
Okay, thank you, Devin, for orienting me to how very elderly I am in this moment. I do appreciate you.
You are very welcome.
Yep. And they ended up having two children, Aisha and Clarista. And unfortunately, shortly into their childhoods, when they were quite young, both of them unfortunately died of diphtheria. So that was really, really sad for them. I did find some conflicting information about Carl's like work history. Once he entered the U.S., there was more records to kind of look at. But there are some sources referring to him as a doctor or radiologist. But I was not able to find any record that he like attended medical school or really any formal schooling or education or training at all. I did find other sources referring to him as radiologic technologist or an X-ray tech. One of the two. I know two of them, that those two have very different roles.
Let's think about in 1926, like that's the early, those things were thick.
Oh, very. Yes. Very.
Like that is the like groundbreaking early stages of even regular photography.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
I mean,
literally what you have in terms of imaging at this time period is X-rays. That's what you have. You don't have, you know, anything more advanced than that. Genuinely. Back then, the radiologic technologist, X-ray tech might have been sort of one and the same because, as I said, all they really had were X-rays at this time. So that was the imaging that they had. So that was a huge part of what he did. And in 1930, he actually ended up leaving his wife in Zephyr Hills. And he had left his kids, actually, prior to them both dying. They were still alive at this point. And it was only a year or two later that they both passed. And that was around the time that he took a job as, I believe, an X-ray tech. And he took this job at U.S. Marine Hospital in Key West, Florida. And when he was employed, his employment records used the name Carl Tansler. We have a lot of evidence saying that that is his real name. I think that was his name, at least up until that point.
And that's what we're going with.
That's what we're going with. So this is the early 90s. Now, tuberculosis is something that was quite rampant in this part of the country and other countries at this time. And we really did not have access, obviously, to any of the drugs that we have now to treat this. So unfortunately, if you were diagnosed with TB around this time period, it was often a very poor prognosis. And so many people died of TB around this time.
Would you say it was a fatal diagnosis at that point in time?
Almost always. Pulmonary TB. Almost always. And for those of you who are not familiar and don't know like that whole vibe back then, tuberculosis is also referred to as TB for short. And often in the olden days, back then, it was also referred to as something called consumption. And they would use that because people would often be sick for a very prolonged period of time. They would lose weight. They would get short of breath. They would get very weak. And it literally was like watching people sort of deteriorate and waste away right in front of your eyes, which is just so sad. Now, it's a mycobacterial infection, which is most commonly found attacking the lungs, but it can also actually attack many different organs. It can attack the kidneys, the liver, the spine, the joints. Not everyone who is exposed to it becomes actively sick, but the infection can remain latent for many years and never cause an issue until all of a sudden it does. And it's sort of opportunistic in that way. And then when somebody
stays quiet until it
does.
Finds its perfect moment.
Yeah, it really does. And once it is active, once it sort of leaves latency and becomes an active infection, it can be very contagious via air droplets. And when the infected person coughs or sneezes, they're just like smudging it all throughout the room. They're just disseminating it everywhere.
Is that a medical term?
Yeah, I just made smudging, it up, actually.
Smudging?
Yeah. Yep. You can look it up. It's there. I promise. It's in all the books. And a lot of it was like cohabitating. If people cohabitated or lived together, it would just like go through families and just kill entire families, like systematically. And the symptoms, aside from coughing, sneezing, include night sweats, high fevers, again, unintentional weight loss, hemoptysis, or coughing up blood. So again, these people would literally waste away, which is where it would get its name, consumption. And even today, it's actually pretty rare in the United States. It is, even today, with the medicines and treatments we have available, it's not an easy thing to treat. If you get diagnosed with active TB, you are committed to long courses of multiple different antibiotics. It gets pretty complicated. So that's what they were dealing with back then, and they had no treatments. It was like, if you were found to have it, it's like, well,
I love you.
I love you. Go home, rest, try to drink some fluids, and we all know that isn't going to help. So good luck, which is really, really upsetting.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Carl, working in radiology and getting x-rays of the chest, would be helping to treat many of these patients because a chest x-ray is a big part of the diagnosis of tuberculosis. You can see a TB infiltrate on an x-ray 9 times out of 10. So that's what they used primarily to diagnose back then. And as a radiology tech or an x-ray tech, which is, I think, what they used to refer to him as back then, but I'm not positive. Again, I have many different terms that he went by.
And honestly, at that point in time, they might have been all in the same role. We just don't know what the title was. But there's probably a very good likelihood that the tech was the radiologist, right?
Yeah, most likely. Yeah. And in
fact,
I could see that happening. And in fact, in terms of imaging, that was, again, like our only option was x-ray because CT imaging did not come out until about the mid-1960s. But the x-rays had started getting a little bit more sophisticated and they were actually starting to use contrast for some studies too. Like if you were doing like a KUB or a gut x-ray, they could start using oral contrast to get better pictures. So they were starting to really, you know, kind of hone that a little bit. Now, April 22nd, 1930, a woman walked into the U.S. Marine Hospital in Key West. She had dark brown eyes, jet black hair, a gorgeous, beautiful face. Her name was Maria Elena Milagro de Hoyos, and she was a young Cuban-American woman. And by all accounts, she was a saucy, beautiful, like, she was a baddie. Like, she was the local babe. Everybody around was like, no, this chick is the real deal. Like, she is so pretty. He took one look at her and was like, oh my God, that's
like,
her.
I'm dead.
This is her. This is the lady from the visions that I saw when I was a teenager. This is the person that I am destined, according to my ancestry, to spend the rest of my life with. So his life like took a pivotal turn at this moment. And now this lady goes by Elena, even though her first name is Maria. She goes by Elena. This is beautiful.
Beautiful name.
And she is the daughter of a local cigar maker named Francisco Hoyos, and her mother's name was Aurora Milagro. And she had two sisters, Florinda and Celia, which, like, these names are also pretty. So on February 18th, 1926, so a few years earlier, Elena had actually gotten married to somebody else named Luis Mesa, but Mesa actually ended up leaving her shortly after they got married because Elena suffered a miscarriage, which, like, what the fuck?
Ugh.
What the fuck, bro?
That's awful. So, wow. Dick move.
Yep. So actually, at the time of her death, Elena was still legally married to this guy. They never actually got, like, legally separated or anything. And she was being brought into the hospital to see Carl at the time by her mother because she had developed a cough and she was having bloody sputum and weight loss, as well as night sweats and high fevers. So all of those classic signs.
Check.
Yes. And she obviously feared that her daughter had consumption. Now, Carl encounters her. Of course, he's immediately struck, like I said, not only by her beauty, but because he recognized her immediately as that woman that he had in his visions all those years ago. And he fixated very quickly. He became very attached to her very quickly. And he basically said to her right off the bat, like, oh, I'm going to marry you. Like, you're my new reason for existing, by the way. Everything's going to be great. We're going to be together forever. Everything's good. Also, she's 22. She's 22 years old. Also, she's like under a lot of pressure from this guy and she's like not well. She's like dying.
Right.
So there's that. The two begin kind of like talking and very quickly, Carl, again, becomes very immersed in her world.
I think Carl now has consumption and it's not TB.
He's being consumed
by Elena.
And she's pretty sick, but she is very appreciative of Carl because Carl just dotes on her. And he ends up supplying her with a lot of things that she needs, anything that she wants, any treatments, like anything that could potentially help. Carl was on it and he was trying to get it for her.
All the tender loving care.
All of it. All of it.
See, this part so far doesn't creep me out other than being twice her age.
Yeah, there's that. She, I think, was just, like, under some pressure. She was obviously unwell. She knew that she had a poor prognosis because everybody who gets consumption has a poor prognosis back in the day. So she knows what's going to happen, right? But she is feeling, she doesn't want to hurt this guy's feelings. Obviously, she doesn't know him very well, but, like, she's like,
I got to commend her for being on her deathbed and worried about somebody else's feelings. I'm just
saying.
That's
the thing. This classic woman, right?
I mean, hello.
And also, like, she just doesn't feel well. So it could have been that she just, like, literally did not have the energy or the desire to, like, shoo somebody away. You know what I mean? Like, she was very ill.
Right.
So, again, she's quite literally on her deathbed for, like, much of this sort of friendship that develops here. And once she was formally diagnosed with tuberculosis, Carl was absolutely devastated. He was so devastated. So, like, though Carl didn't really have any actual medical training and really virtually no medical knowledge aside from how to take an X-ray, he would really just not accept that his lady was dying. And he was, like, determined, like, I am going to stop this. I'm going to find the cure. I'm going to do something about this.
He's in denial, his own stages of grief.
Very much. Very much. And he is coping by showering her and her mother and father and her sisters with gifts. And he was there all the time. He would never leave her side. He became very determined single-handedly to save her from tuberculosis.
Which, I mean, at this point is a lot.
It's desperation.
Like,
yeah,
he's desperate for sure. But yes. I don't know. Like, take a step back, man.
Yeah, let's all chill. Let's all chill. So he starts, like, mixing shit up. Like, making tonics, buying all these snake oils, anything he hears about that might help. Like, he's buying it for her, like, all these little fake tinctures and, like, making all these little elixirs. Like, he's mixing things up himself. He's also buying whatever he can that might help, that, like, all these little cure-alls that got marketed back then. They're trying everything, literally.
Can you
everything.
Imagine what was going up through her head? Like, this essential stranger is, you know what I mean? Like,
he may have been giving her a little bit of hope, too. He may have been like, no, you do not worry your pretty little head. You are going to be fine.
I got you. I'm going to
save you.
Yeah.
So, and the fact that he was, like, in a hospital gave him access to certain things, certain chemicals, certain mixtures that he would then bring home. He would also bring home medical equipment to help care for her at home. He even brought an X-ray machine home one time so that he could, like, take surveillance imaging of her.
Make sure it's not getting worse.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. So he was, like, very desperate that things were just going to turn around. So it might have been like all of the gifts, all of the monetary stuff, and all of the attention and all of the help that they were getting that like made her sisters and her parents like be okay with the fact that he never left her alone. You know, it's very, very possible that, you know, her care was probably very expensive. The things that she needed was very expensive. So maybe they appreciated him in that way, you know?
Right.
So I think maybe that was a lot of part of why, you know, they tolerated him being there so much.
But also you're in a different era, too.
That's like, true. Yeah.
You know, we're definitely in a different time where those efforts, like, so maybe we're a little like, wow, that's a lot. And we know like he's got something special going on inside of his head. But
yeah, very much so.
So we know that. But like, if you think about it, like, it's definitely like everybody talks about, oh, different generation and all that stuff. But like, it definitely is that time of like, help thy neighbor. Like, and they did that during that time period. So maybe you and I were like trying to find reasons why they were not okay with it, but maybe they were.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know? Maybe they were. You're right. Yeah, absolutely. And it was not only the medical stuff and the chemicals. He was buying jewelry, books, clothing. Again, there's no evidence that this was ever like reciprocated. There's no evidence that she ever was like, yes, I want to be with you. We're in love. It's no evidence that this ever physically escalated beyond a friendship and that she ever accepted any sort of boyfriend, girlfriend type of situation.
Hey, boyfriend.
Or engagement or anything like that. None of that has been, there was no evidence of anything like that. So, you know, and the family, I think, is like, you know what? I know that no scientist or doctor has found a cure yet in the entire world, but what if he does stumble on something? Maybe Carl will. Who knows? Like, literally anything. Weirder things have happened. So, like, what's it going to hurt? She's already dying. Feed her all the snake oil you want. You know what I mean? If this might help, let's do it. So he did this for over a year, and he did this every single day. He was there. He barely left her side day in, day out for a year. Unfortunately, the TB, of course, continued to progress, and she passed away on October 25th, 1931.
At a very young age.
Very young. She's 23.
So crazy.
Tansler is obviously beside himself, absolutely crushed, and his whole reason for living and his whole reason for being is now gone.
Mm-hmm.
He did offer to pay for her funeral, as he had grown very close to her family, her sisters, and her parents through this whole year. And he also offered to commission the construction of this big, beautiful, like, above ground marble mausoleum for her to be interned in.
Hey, Kate.
And yeah.
I want one of those.
Okay, I'm writing it down. Marble mausoleum.
Make sure David doesn't forget.
Devin. If David tries to put you in the ground, I will scratch his fucking eyes out. No, and I will say, you will erect her fucking monument, her mausoleum right now, and stick her in there.
Yes, please.
Yes. So he commissioned this huge mausoleum. And of course, the family was like, yeah, I mean, that sounds real fancy. Let's do it. That's amazing. So this was in Key West Cemetery in Key West, Florida. And Tansler visited this mausoleum that Elena was laid to rest in every single day. Every day, without fail, no matter what, he was there. And by all accounts, he was like a vacuous shell of a man. He was no longer himself. He was absolutely beside himself. He seemed very disconnected. He would spend time like sitting by the mausoleum and by her casket, and he would sing to her. He would play his guitar. He would talk with her like he would, like she was there. Like, he would have whole conversations as if she was right there. And he's just really not moving on. It's very clear. He is not moving on.
He's brokenhearted.
He is brokenhearted, but he's also like acting as though she's still there, which is a little unhealthy, I think. You know?
Well, we know where this goes, so.
We do. Everything's very unhealthy.
We know.
Everything's not even a little bit healthy how this unfolds. So he's still having these little visions here and there. And he would later recount that she would come to him in visions after her death and talk to him while he was at her graveside. And that's why he went so often, because whenever he was there, he would end up getting visions, and it was like she was alive. It was like they could talk and have a conversation. So he would later recount that in these visions, Elena would say, "Take me home. Take me away from here. Take me out of my grave and take me home to be with you. I want to be with you at your home." So.
Don't think she said that.
I mean, I don't think so either, but I don't know. So after almost 2 years of him going there every single day and mourning her death, he decided eventually that their time together was like totally not over. And on one evening in April of 1933, Tanzler went to the Key West Cemetery. He entered her mausoleum and opened her sarcophagus or what have you and removed her remains. And he brought with him a toy wagon, which we surmised in the original episode might have been a radio flyer.
That's right. That's right.
I don't know if it was a radio flyer.
In 1927, 28, when this was.
1933. I think it was probably. It's probably the OG.
I think it's the OG.
So he just put her in that radio flyer. Okay. This was at night. So he was under the cover of darkness and he removed her body from the cemetery. He put her in his vehicle and he drove her home.
So I know we get graphic in this story, but
we do.
I can't remember from the original. Do we talk about like when you first open up a casket when someone has been, you know, gone for 2 years, what that looks like?
Yeah.
What that smells like.
The thing is, it had been 2 years since she passed, and this is southern Florida, southernmost Florida, if you will. And the embalming practices back then were not real sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
So she had deteriorated quite excessively at this point. Like she was not, she probably did not have a whole lot of like soft tissue on her really left.
She was not skeletal yet.
No, probably not quite. But I mean, she had lost a lot of her soft tissue integrity. So this must have been quite a shocking sight for him, but it did not deter him from what he wanted to do.
No, he's probably like, "It's okay, honey, I'll fix you."
Yeah, well, that's exactly what's going through his head, is that like she's still here. She's talking to me in my visions. So she must be, you know, sentient on some plane, and I am going to realign her with her body and everything's going to be fine.
No big deal.
Yeah. So I think that what they did do in terms of preparation for burial is they remove the internal organs, like from the chest and the abdominal cavities, and that's basically it. Everything else is kind of left as is. So her...
Why do you think they did that?
I wish I had an answer for you. I'm not really sure. That's a great question.
I'm just curious, like, why?
It's a great question.
Were they wanting to study TB, I wonder? I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. Could be.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
And so her chest and abdominal cavities were like a little sunken, obviously. Her skin had definitely decomposed pretty significantly, and her body was essentially like losing all of its shape, like altogether. So he began this process of restoring her body to what he felt was his former glory, and he ended up taking a bunch of liberties with her body in order to achieve this reconstruction. So he
way of putting it.
Liberties. Yeah. So he filled her empty cavities, like her chest cavity and her abdominal cavity, with rags and plaster of Paris to help regain her natural shape. He would dress her in stockings, dresses, jewelry, gloves, and he would keep her body with him in his bed. And she stayed in his bed the majority of the time, but he did move her about the house, reposition her, put her in chairs, get her up and walk her around. And
I picture the, I'm just picturing it.
I know.
A scene from Home Alone. Remember when all the mannequins are like dancing around, rocking around the Christmas tree? That's like what I picture right now.
Yeah.
The two of them.
And do you remember how he gets caught?
Oh, mm-hmm. I do now.
Yeah.
I do now. Yes.
Exactly what happened. So he would dress her in like these nice outfits and all this jewelry. And one thing that he had to manage when she was in the house with him was the odor, right? Because, again, she was not embalmed and she very much still had that odor of decomposition, which is very strong and very recognizable.
Yes.
So he would fill his home with fresh flowers all the time. He always had a house full of like very fragrant fresh flowers. And the Oyos' family had remained close with Carl through all this. And once he started reconstructing Elena's remains, he kind of like abruptly stopped going to visit them, going to her graveside. And they noticed because they went all the time too. And they noticed
and
that
like,
all of a sudden
hey, Carl
wasn't coming around anymore. So they noticed that, that he just kind of like stopped. And they were like, I mean, okay, you know, maybe he's finally moving on a little bit. You know, maybe he's, you know, just like trying to focus on work and, you know, trying to get his life back together. And maybe he's met someone. Like, we hope that he's actually moved on a little bit. Yeah. So there's that. But also, he had stopped showing up to work once Elena was back in his house. So he just like lost his job and he started just staying at his house around the clock with his dead friend. And I mean, there was never any evidence that they were ever more than friends. So I'm going to call them dead friend. So he became like very much a recluse.
Person, what do you call the person that the opposite of the imprinting, the person you imprinted on? Is there a term for that?
Imprinter and imprintee? I don't know.
Why not?
Sure. Okay.
That's what we're going with.
He became a recluse. Like, he was essentially a hermit. He almost never went out except to get supplies. And the supplies were like anything he could use to keep the smell down, mainly fresh flowers, perfumes, things like that. He would buy her gifts. Like, he would want her to dress in like the latest fashion. He would buy her nice jewelry. And he would buy her gloves, stockings, shoes, anything that you would buy for like your girlfriend or wife for like a special occasion. He would do this all the time. He would just buy a bunch of shit for her all the time. So as time went on, of course, she continues to decompose and her remains continue to deteriorate, as remains do over time. So eventually he ended up making and inserting glass eyes for her so that it resembled her natural eyes. And her joints start to loosen at this point too, because as she's decomposing, like all of that connective tissue is starting to break down now. So he ends up reinforcing her loose joints using piano wire. And he's essentially at this point, like holding her together with piano wire. Her hair also started falling out. So he would collect it and he actually fashioned a wig out of all of her hair that she lost around this time.
So I think before we go further, I'm going to just say, you can revisit, which is what we're doing, right? But you cannot recreate the reactions of what I once had in episode 1.
No, I know. That's what made it really special.
They were special. Right?
They were special.
So I think I know the story now, so I'm not going to be like, what? Oh, my God.
I know.
I think what I'm going to focus on now for the other side of it is I know. So, I mean, this whole thing is creepy, right? We this is very weird. This is bizarre and it's gross, right?
It can, yeah. It's,
but so we covered all of that way back in season one. Is that when it was?
Yeah.
Whatever.
One. Yeah.
So I think what I'm going to focus on now is the sweet, tender parts.
There you
How
go.
Much he is detail caring for her. Every little detail. Oh, honey, your knee's out of place. I got you.
Like, let me get some piano wire.
Yeah. Like, but it, you know what? It's just he's being very delicate and he's paying attention to everything. I mean, there's a lot I still agree with the first episode, the first time we did this. However, I'm going to just focus on how delicate he is with her.
There you go. You just
you
focus
like that?
On the positive.
That's what Thank I'm going to focus on.
Okay, let's all help Devin keep positive and focus on the delicate positivity over here. I love that for you.
Because don't all of us want someone that's just going to hold us together?
I mean, yeah, I would, I think, want to be left in my mausoleum.
That's why I started to just chuckle a little bit, because I'm always like, you know, I need someone who helps me hold it together, right? But I don't mean physically, so.
But also, just let me decompose. Like, that's fine.
But also, just let me rest in peace.
Yeah, like, I just want to sleep, you know? Everyone says you can sleep when you're dead. Like, that's what I'm looking forward to, is some fucking sleep. Okay? Just let me have my sleep. It's long overdue, I promise you. So he would go on and continue this reconstruction, if you will, of her body and sleep with her body in his bed every single night for 7 years.
Yeah.
7 years.
I mean,
she had been dead for 9 years because she was already dead for 2 years when she entered
the house.
Before
the radio flyer came coming along.
Before a radio flyer came in and he just trucked her down with a radio flyer. So
that is unbelievable.
I mean, it's actually wild. And, you know, at this point, of course, her skin had deteriorated significantly. So we had mentioned wax, and what he was doing is he was using mortician's wax to patch the holes that would happen in her skin. And over the years, she would deteriorate more and more. And he would have to go get out more wax and patch more holes. And she, by the end, had formed this thick layer of wax. I mean, her entire face was wax. And we posted the photos when we did the first episode.
We did.
I don't think I'm going to post it again because
we did it once.
The poor thing. We did it once, and also, like, the poor thing has been gawked at enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just, she looked like a doll, because eventually he had layered so much wax on that he had to go over her eyes, even though he put glass eyes in, and he had painted eyes over the wax. So, it's just wild to see the lengths that he went to. And she started sort of resembling this like mannequin or a life-size doll after a while. And so Tanzler had also made moves to construct a makeshift laboratory on his property. And he actually constructed it apparently using part of like a plane fuselage, which he constructed this laboratory to make it look like a mini space shuttle, this laboratory. It was like shaped like a.
Why don't I remember this part?
Because it's a detail. It's a sprinkle, Devin, that I.
See, that's why I don't remember. You see?
Scared I'm the picking shit out of me.
Sorry.
You're so welcome. Funny. And he called this laboratory, because it was like a little ship, he called it Elena's Starship. That's what he called it.
Cute.
And his plan this whole time was to fly her body eventually into the stratosphere so that the high levels of radiation from outer space could penetrate her tissues, and he was convinced that this would bring her back to life.
No.
That's what she needed. Is what she needed. She needed the high levels of radiation from outer space, and no problem, she would come back to life.
Carl.
You're killing me, Carl. You're killing me, buddy. So, again, he's very reclusive. So he's spending all of his time going out and shopping for supplies, then coming back, maintaining
for his spaceship.
containing this corpse in his house that is just slowly breaking apart and is now 95% artificial materials at this point and maybe some bones. And he has built this space shuttle shaped laboratory in which he is going to send her into space to come back to life eventually.
This sprinkle is a storm.
You're welcome. So
it's a flood.
This guy starts getting some attention from the townspeople because he's just so reclusive. He's very bizarre when he is out. Nobody ever sees him anywhere except buying things for ladies. And and everyone's like, what the hell is going on with this guy? He started becoming like the running joke. Like, why is this guy buying all of these like ladies' gifts when we've never seen a woman come and go from his house? Like, it's clear that he's not like living with a woman, like in the traditional sense. So like, what's going on? And everybody in the town kind of knew how devoted he was to this woman before she passed. So weirdly enough, a rumor did start to form that he just like took her body from the graveyard and brought her home. And there was this rumor going around that he was just...
Is it a rumor if it's true?
Had this dead body in his house and everybody treated it as if it was a big joke. Nobody really thought he had an actual dead person in his house, but they're like, I mean, he keeps buying all these fancy women's things. I don't know. Do you guys have an explanation? And that's like how the rumor mill kind of started to generate all these crazy things.
It's not a rumor. It's the truth.
Elena's sister, Florinda, was never a huge fan of Carl. Like, she tolerated him because he took very good care of her whole family and especially her sister. So she was never like, she always felt like there was something just weird about this guy. He kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But like, I appreciate your effort in caring for our family. I appreciate you taking care of some of the financial stuff, taking care of her funeral arrangements. Like, and I appreciate how devoted you were. But like, she always, it always kind of rubbed her the wrong way how much time he spent at the mausoleum, that he would talk to her like she was still alive. She's like, this guy, there's something going on with this guy. And now Florinda starts hearing these rumors around town that this man, this hermit, is barely ever out of his house unless he's buying ladies gifts, but nobody ever comes and goes from his house. So like, what's going on in there? And she actually heard mention of like, well, maybe he's got his, maybe he went to the graveyard, stole his, you know, ex-girlfriend and is living with her in his house. And she's like, huh.
'Cause who would think of that, first of all, to even make a suggestion or a joke about it?
Like, well, that's the thing is that,
that
like
would not
everybody
even come
knew-
to my brain.
I don't think it would come to mind either, but I think that because of how devoted he was and everybody knew how much he cared for this lady and how much time he spent with her and how he just like spent all of his time in the mausoleum
and then
stopped. All of a sudden he stopped and now he doesn't leave his house and he buys a bunch of girls' stuff. Like for me, it's like, oh, maybe he brought her home. You know what I mean? I guess when you put it like that, it's not like that far of a reach, but I mean, yes, it does seem weird that they jumped to that, but that was the rumor. That was the rumor that was fucking flying around. And Florinda caught wind of it. And she was like, huh, I don't love this.
I wonder why.
Is everyone saying that? And why do I feel like it's not impossible that this is actually what's the reality? So she's already kind of got the wheels turning a little bit. And it all kind of culminated when a local boy was riding his bike in the area and he happened to glance in Carl's window. And what he saw was Carl dancing with what appeared to be a life-size doll or mannequin. And he apparently picked her up and carried her around quite a bit and often carried her around the house, put her in chairs, put her in different positions, brought her into the Starship laboratory, brought her out to the back garden, like brought her everywhere. Okay. He carried her around all the time and kind of treated her like she was a companion living in the house with him. Now, Florinda heard the murmurings in the town that this boy had driven by and seen him dancing with what looked like a mannequin or a doll. And she really was like, hold on a minute. I am now genuinely concerned that this man has removed my sister from her grave and is living with her in his house. I feel like I need to just lay eyes on that house and like make sure that I'm crazy. Can we? I just need some confirmation that I'm being psychotic here, because
that would be the better outcome. Right?
Yeah, it really would. I'd really love to not be right about this. So she just like picked up the phone and called the authorities and was like, can you guys just like do a quick knock on the door and just if you see any like, you know,
dead
human
bodies.
Remains or dead bodies or body parts or like, you know, doll looking creatures, like, can you just that's my sister. Can you figure that out? So the authorities show up.
Can you imagine making that phone call?
Oh, my God. I would be like, listen, I know I sound crazy. Like, I know this, but can you just check? Please just check and I'll never bother you again.
Hey, just do it anyway.
Just check it. Oh. Everything together was just too much. So the authorities end up showing up. And what they found was what looked like a mannequin or a doll. But upon closer inspection, they realized that it was, in fact, a actual human body under all of those layers of wax of Elena Hoyos. Now, in the house, they found that he had this whole mini lab in there that was shaped like a ship. They found all kinds of concoctions. They found disinfectants, deodorants. The house was full of fresh flowers.
Thank God for the flowers.
And he was using all of these chemicals and compounds to try and preserve her, keep her hidden away, and maybe to bring her back to life. He was trying to experiment on her to see if he could bring her back to life.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
So at this point, it's 1940, and trigger warning for this next part, because there are themes of like potentially sexual assault, necrophilia, although nothing has been confirmed, but I'm going to tell you just some findings.
I hated this part.
An autopsy was performed shortly after she was discovered, and it identified obviously the piano wire, the rags and the plaster of Paris that he had used to stuff her cavities, all of the wax, all those layers were peeled off, discovered the glass eyes, the wig made of her hair, and most troublingly, it discovered the presence of a cardboard or paper tube that had been inserted between her legs into her pelvic cavity, seemingly to mimic a vaginal opening.
I hated
Despite finding this, he admitted to everything, but he never admitted to having sex with her corpse or violating her corpse in that way. He staunchly denied it. Although, why was that there?
Maybe it was
that.
Correct. But maybe it was just part of my original saying of taking care of the such detail to restore her to her original form as close as what, you know what I mean? So
maybe
that's what I'm going to focus on.
I'm hoping that he never did that to her. I really am hoping, because that is really upsetting.
Yes, it is.
So there's that. Now, there are photos, which again, I'm not going to post them this time around. If you'd like to go see them on our old post, that's fine. And you can also Google it. But they're pretty troubling to see. I mean, what it looks like is a mannequin or a doll.
If you don't
sculpture.
Know this story, you don't know what you're looking at, honestly.
Well, exactly. You would never know that you're looking at an actual human being and not a mask of some kind, because it just looks like a painted mannequin head. So shortly after the corpse's discovery by authorities, Lena's body was examined by physicians, pathologists, and then, for reasons unknown, was put on public display at the Dean Lopez funeral home, where it was viewed by as many as 7,000 people.
Ugh.
Which is, I hate this fact
I
about the whole case.
I don't understand.
Why would you do this? Why the hell would you do, like, why would this ever happen? I mean, I know why, because the case was getting a lot of attention, because the papers were going crazy, because people were curious, but it's like,
so
you can
people
still
were,
keep it a secret. You still don't have to show it.
So in 1940, like, they were feeding to the media, doing what
exactly,
the media wanted. Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. So they're showing off, like, his work. Like, look what this man did to this woman. And it's so sad for me, because this woman died tragically, very, very young, and, like, just wanted to be laid to rest in, like, this beautiful mausoleum that he commissioned for her. And she has not rested even a little bit, because, first of all, he wouldn't leave her the fuck alone for 2 years, the first mm-hmm. 2 years. And then he just took her and defiled her body in multiple ways. So now it's like the funeral home is, like, tampering with her body because it just wants some media attention. It's like, fuck you. You know, I just can't stand that about this.
Of course.
So what they ended up having to do, because people actually kept trying to break into the funeral home to, like, further damage her body,
which is just
touch it, like,
so
I
unsettling.
Just, that's really uncomfortable. Like, people have always been so shitty. It's, like, not even funny. They're still very shitty. We're all still very shitty. But this is just wild. So they ended up having to remove her from the funeral home and, unfortunately, bury her in an unmarked grave somewhere in Key West, Florida. So she is buried to this day in an unmarked grave to prevent any tampering with her remains, which
so
is
sad. I hope her family
so
knew
sad.
Where she was. I hope at least
I
they got
really,
to know.
I hope at least her family have a place that they can visit.
But of course, they were probably under watch, so it's not like they could go because...
Exactly, because somebody would see it and
correct.
Find her. Yeah,
correct.
Exactly. You're right. Now, Tansler was psychiatrically examined and found to be mentally competent to stand trial, and the charge of wantonly and maliciously destroying a grave and removing a body without authorization was filed. So that was the only charge that they were even really able to get with him, because at this time, there really were no laws against tampering with a body and against defiling a corpse.
Because they didn't think people would do it.
Oh, because who the fuck does that, bro? Like, literally no one. So technically that is not against the law at this time. So all they could do was charge the guy with what they charged him with. So no matter how great, you know, depraved and sick and psychotic this whole seems to us, you know, legally there wasn't a whole lot that could be done for him against him. So after a preliminary hearing on October 9th, 1940, at the Monroe County Courthouse in Key West, Tansler was held to answer on this charge, but the case was eventually dropped. And it was dropped because at the time, the statute of limitations for the crime had expired. Because it had been well over 7 years at this mm-hmm. point that he actually committed the removal of the body, the grave robbing, essentially, right?
Yeah.
So that statute of limitations was up.
Is that so crazy?
In 1944, Tansler finally moved to Pasco County, Florida. And this was close to Zephyr Hills, Florida, which, if you remember, is where him and his wife Doris lived. So it's close to, you know, his old stomping ground. Oh. His ex-wife, Doris, was actually still alive at this point. This is the woman that he left shortly before his two young children died, before he met Elena. And the two of them ended up actually reconnecting around this time because he moved back to the area.
Just when I'm thinking, she's probably like, thank God I got away.
I know. Yeah, no, not so much. So they actually reconnected and she like supported him. She helped him out. She gave him a place to live. And through his later years, they actually like kind of stayed together. I don't know that they were ever legally married again, but they were close and they lived together for a period of time. So Tansler actually ended up making a replica of what he had constructed. So this is separate from actual Elena's remains. So he essentially constructed a mannequin, like a life-size doll of Elena, and lived with it for his remaining years in this house.
With the wife.
Yeah. So
sure,
he would like,
that's not uncomfortable at all.
Not at all. No. And he treated it. So that's why I'm like, I don't know if they were ever like legally married or together, but they did live in the same house. So maybe they were just companions or friends or whatnot. And she was like, whatever, fucking weird old Carl with his mannequin, or I don't know what the hell's going on over there. So he like lived with the last few years of his life with this replica of corpse Elena in his house.
You know what?
And
you do you, bro.
I mean, whatever, man. If you're not hurting anybody, whatever. So on July 3rd, 1952, he was found dead on the floor of his home. He was 75 years old. And there were rumors like kind of floating around after he passed that Tanzler had left behind notes, because we know he's a guy that likes to journal and likes to record his thoughts.
Yeah.
And I couldn't verify any of this. So this is all very much unverified. And there were a lot of sources that said that these were debunked and they were a hoax, and other people that said, no, these are very legit. So it's hard to know, like, if these are actually like a thing or not really. But he stated that in these notes, quote unquote, that he had actually found Elena's grave, and that the life-size doll he created of her was actually her. Like, he had found like her unmarked grave, and that he had brought her back to the house and recreated that because it was actually Elena. So a lot of like really crazy stuff. Again, I highly doubt that's true.
I don't think so, because I think he was under scope.
Too much scrutiny. I don't think he would have done that. There are also rumors that he had sent letters claiming to have poisoned Elena, like out of mercy because she was suffering. I also don't believe that because he worked. He worked really hard and tried everything to try and keep her alive.
Yep.
I don't think he would have, even to quote unquote relieve suffering, I don't think he would have
taken steps to hasten her death.
I don't think he would have done that at all. And so that is the wackadoodle 2.0 story.
I mean, I'm
going to
say, I probably would have preferred that he had done that over what he did do. You know, I mean, just saying.
I don't know. But then he would have murdered someone.
That's true. But fine.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know what I would prefer, but it's wild.
I don't have to know.
You don't, because we can put this to rest now. We're not going to revamp this again. I'm putting you out of your misery.
He's not coming out of the vault again.
He's literally not.
No pun intended, by the way.
It was a brilliant choice of words. I love you so much. You're too funny. Oh, my frickin' Lord. You are amazing.
Well, thanks for listening to this one, everyone. Again.
2.0.
If you want to check us out on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/midcrimes.
Wait, what? That's not the... Don't do that.
Facebook.com, first of all.
Who the fuck goes to facebook.com? Literally no one.
I'm so tired. You can go to Facebook and find us, okay?
Okay. Just search MedCrimes. You can find us on YouTube at MedCrimes Podcast.
Instagram. Wow. The app, not the .com.
Or .com, I guess. I don't know. Whatever you do.
At MedCrimes.
I mean, yep. Or if you wish to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/MedCrimes Podcast or something.
You can send us any crazy stories, ideas, episode suggestions at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Let's not steal any remains from graves, you guys.
Yeah, let's not do that.
That's a little much.
It's now 2026. That was so 1926. Okay, we don't.
Yeah, let's leave that in the past. We're not going to do that. We love you and stay safe out there.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.